All right. We are live.
And I think we got to try this intro music, Johnny, just because, okay. You know, we got this new fancy board. Right. Offices at China Hall on a...
Is it a Monday?
Monday afternoon.
Yes, it is. Monday afternoon, shortly after Christmas. And we got some baked goods.
My goodness, they're so good.
I already know we have our best guest ever. Because we have baked goods in the house.
I know. Has it been done before?
It's never been done before.
Hey, we're a trendsetter.
Who are we joined by today at the Office of China Hall?
My name is Corky Gaskell. I am the captain and, I guess, general manager of the Roosters Baseball Club here in Rochester.
Roosters Baseball Club. So I think of Roosters. I'm sure some people think of the bar. There's the Roosters Bar in town.
Yep.
Which came after the club.
Much after.
Yep. And, you know, baseball, just the all-American sport. And, Johnny, do you have any idea what we're talking about today?
No, I don't. I actually don't watch baseball at all, so.
You have an advantage.
Okay.
Because the game was different enough that you're not going to get messed up.
Okay, perfect. Perfect.
And when you say different enough, what do you mean by that?
Well, the year that we play, 1860, was really the third year of once rules had been set for baseball. First rules were 1857. So by 1860, they'd only been 3 years along, and the game was still brand new, basically. It had not developed into everything we know about baseball today. That didn't happen until almost we got into the 20th century. So we're doing things like catching the ball on one bounce to put a batter out.
Oh,
1860. Okay, now rewind the clock.
Yeah. So if it bounces one time and you catch it, the batter's out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's fair or foul. So even if it goes backwards and you catch it.
Wow. Out. Oh, wait. The
catcher can catch a ball on a foul ball from the striker.
Okay.
It's the most embarrassing out you can make in vintage baseball. But so it's things like that where we're different enough, and that's what draws people to come watch us.
Yeah.
Is if we were just playing modern baseball dressed in funny uniforms, they'd go, who needs to see that?
Right.
But we have an educational aspect where we want to teach the people how the game was actually played back then when it first started.
So they play vintage baseball dating back to the era of 1860.
That's insane.
We're basically a living history exhibit.
Right, that's awesome. Wait, so where do you guys play?
Out at the History Center of Olmsted County. Okay. So we're off County Road 22.
If you want to grab the mic too and just hold it nice and close, you can move it, get it comfortable wherever it fits. Yeah. So the History Center, you know where that's at?
Isn't it over, you take West Circle down to the mall and then it's on your right?
Before you get to the mall,
yeah, before you get
to
the mall, it's on your right, yeah.
Yeah, kind of the big red barn is what I always think of.
Exactly, exactly. It's a cool place. We've got an old cabin, an old schoolhouse, a tinsmith house, a blacksmith. It's just the whole 1860s era setup out there.
That is neat. Yep. So what got you into baseball?
Well, baseball I've enjoyed since I was a kid. As far as the Roosters, is when I was coaching baseball here in town, youth baseball, I would take my family out and watch these guys called the Roosters play. They would play for Rochester Fest events. I thought, that's pretty cool when I'm done coaching. Yeah, maybe I'll call them and see what happens. I'll do a tryout, whatever it takes. And I sent the email when I was done coaching, and she said, you know, we got some games this weekend, and we're short some players. Okay. And ironically, you know, I took my son, who I just finished coaching. He was 14 at the time. And we had a couple guys that didn't make it to the game on time, so he got dragged in.
Oh, wow. Oh.
He's been playing as long as I have. So he's 25 now and has 11 years of playing because he got his start when he was 14 just because of that.
I'm sure the rules messed him up the first game. I'm sure they messed you up the first game.
My first at-bat, they told me, you know, and this is, again, 1860, you can't run through first base like you would today. You got to stop on the base. And I ran right through it because I just got done coaching baseball and telling my kids to run through the base. So I ran through the base and got tagged out.
Because as soon as you pass the base in Roosters vintage baseball,
you're live.
You're out. Oh, yeah, you're still live. I see.
They had to
still got to tag you. Yeah. That's neat.
Can they touch the base and get you out?
Oh, because I have the right to go to second base now.
Oh, okay. Okay, sweet.
So we are live, just so you know, we're live on Facebook, so I'm going to pull up our Facebook feed just to see if anybody has any questions about vintage baseball, if we don't think of them. It's always kind of fun to watch. But so talk us through that first game. What else happened? What else did you learn?
Well, we played three games. This was up in Arlington, Minnesota. And my first three games, and I always tell people, I finished the day with the Roosters without a single loss. But the interesting thing is I finished the day with the Roosters without a single win. We tied all three games because they were put on a time limit for this event. That wasn't what happened in 1860, but in order to get all the teams through,
oh yeah,
we had to play within a certain time limit. And at the end of all three games, we ended up tied. So I was 0-0 and 3 after my first event. So that was fun. But it was a learning experience for me, because between the time I sent the email that I was interested and my first game was just a few days, and I didn't have time to study the rules. I didn't have time to figure out what was going on. I just showed up and played. You know, I got to learn to catch a ball with my bare hands because there's no gloves.
Oh, wow.
No gloves.
Is the ball harder? It can't be. Softer?
So I'm rolling you a ball. I make these for my team. I learned how to make them because you buy them from a factory, and they don't look like an 1860s baseball. They look more like a modern baseball, which we don't want. So these are made out of one piece of leather.
Okay.
We buy these hides of leather, cut them to a pattern, punch all the holes, make the core of the ball with rubber band and yarn.
Are you serious?
Oh, I'm serious.
Wow.
And so now we have...
He drops it on the table.
It doesn't matter.
It bounces like
a ball. But your question on hard, it depends on who makes the ball.
Oh, okay.
Right? So I can make a ball, and I do this for teams when they have like a short field or out in left field, there's a river or some woods, and they don't want the ball to go in it. I'll just make them a little softer so they don't travel as far.
Okay.
But that ball coming at you 90 miles an hour off a bat will hurt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
We should test that, Johnny. How hard do you think it'll hurt?
I don't care how long you've been playing. That hurts.
Yeah.
And most of my guys, and actually most of the guys that play this game, we have day jobs. And so I tell them, I said, if it's coming at you and you don't want to touch it, let it go. The outfielder will get it.
Yeah.
And let's play the next play.
Right.
Because as soon as you do something stupid, you're going to break a finger, and it's happened a lot. You're going to break a finger, dislocate a finger, big bruise somewhere.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt.
You don't have a glove.
You don't have a glove.
At some point, they broke enough fingers in 1860s through the 1900s when they finally were like, hey, so gloves allowed.
This is what the glove looked like in 1860. It wasn't meant to help you catch the ball. It was once you broke your hand, you had something to protect it.
So for those that can't see it and are listening to the podcast, it is like a workman's glove, leather glove that you would see at Fleet Farm or, you know, Menards, and the fingertips are cut off.
I think that's so funny. You don't use it to help you catch it. Use it to help after you broke your finger.
Yeah, it's to protect your hands so you can keep playing.
Hold your finger together in place.
So there was no glove with a web until actually the turn of the 20th century. Even the initial gloves they came out with in the 80s when they started pitching overhand, because our game is still underhand.
Okay.
It was a very rudimentary, that type of glove, even with fingers now all the way in it, more or less just to kind of help protect the sting. There was no pillow pads or anything like that.
Mm.
So I've seen pictures of catchers' hands after they're done, and they're just black and blue and dislocated fingers everywhere.
Are they still throwing hard underhand, though?
Yes. I mean, the trick is to throw it hard accurately. And so we tell people, if you can't do it accurately hard, then don't throw it hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in that era, the good pitchers could throw it hard with accuracy, and they could strike people out. But if they couldn't throw it accurately, the game went forever, because you only had called strikes. You didn't have called balls until 1864. So if they were throwing them wide, you could stand there for 40 pitches before you got one.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we don't want to show people that. People will get up and leave. So we encourage people, if you can't put speed on it, don't worry about it. Just
throw it accurately.
Get it at the plate. And then work on getting a little faster. There's some guys that can't do anything but slow pitch, softball it.
Yeah, underhand, lob.
You know, that's not the way it really was all the time. So we don't like to do it all the time. But if that's all you got, let's get the game going.
Right.
You know, we'll show them the rest of the game.
Yeah. So tell us about the Roosters and just the history and, you know, how many games are there in a year, and is the team strong, and what do you got?
Yeah, so we'll do a little history if that's okay. Back in 1994, the Quick Steps started a team up in Minneapolis. They were the first team in Minnesota to play vintage baseball. And they learned the game from a team out in Columbus, Ohio, who started in the Midwest in 1980. And Mary Jane Schmidt, who was at the History Center, and she was getting close to being the interim director at that time, but she thought this would be a great way to bring people to the History Center and maybe a way to raise funds for the History Center because they were struggling financially. And so she brought this team from Minneapolis down, and she actually got the team from Columbus, Ohio, to come out to play them in an exhibition to see what the town thought of it. And it was so well received, she decided she was going to go on a mission to start a team in Rochester. And by 1997, she made that come true, and that was the first year of the Roosters. And then they played maybe five or six times a year. And it was mostly either that team from Minneapolis or some group of local media people, or they would go to Chatfield during their Chatfield days and find a group of locals, or they'd go to Viola for the Gopher Count days and try to find some locals. They were just whoever they could find. And then over the next probably 10 years, two or three more teams started up in Southeast Minnesota. So we got to where now there's three teams, four teams, five teams, to where today now we have 12. And we're all within about an hour and a half of each other.
Great.
So we have a full schedule. So this year we're going to play 21 games. I've got about 25 guys on the roster, but they have kids. They're not available every weekend. So it's a struggle.
You mean they're not professional baseball players?
Yeah. Yeah. So the
I thought if you became a Rooster, you were a pro.
Nope. We're 1860 is still the amateur era. The professional era started 1871. So you guys on Facebook just learned something.
Yeah.
And so I don't get the same nine every game is what I'm getting at. It's right, whoever can make it can make it. I think I'm the only one that's ever been to every game. Yeah. And that's just because my kids are older. I'm available every weekend and as the captain. Right. And now when Mary Jane Schmidt died 3 years ago, I took over running the club. So I have to kind of make myself available, which is easy to do. And my wife's just been a tremendous help with that, helping me keep everything straight.
That's great.
And so
it's a lot of games.
It is. And we're not a league where we don't keep standings. Every team has guys that are competitive and know the score and they know their batting average. They didn't really do that back in the 1860s. So we, at the end of the year, someone will say, "How'd you do?" And I said, "We did great. We had good turnout. You know, the fans seemed to enjoy it. They learned a lot." "How many games you win?" "I don't know." You know, I think the 1 year that I remember is because we were 19-1. Yeah. And we had that one loss. Otherwise, just we lose, we win. But our goal is to educate.
Yep.
And so our little hashtags on Twitter and Facebook are education, entertainment, and fun. And we try to do it in that order. So if we've taught people something at the end of our game and the other guy scored 10 more runs than this, so be it.
Right.
We're there to educate. I'm older. My competitive spirit isn't the same as it used to be. I got some younger guys that are,
Let's go.
I want to win. And that's fine as long as it don't turn it into a beer league softball game, right? Because it was a gentleman's game back then. We're going to cheer for that other team if they make a good play.
Yeah.
Just like they would cheer for us. And that's just the way it was. And so we just kind of have to sometimes bite our tongue and say, good job, guys. You know, it's a great play. You just robbed me of a double, but whatever. And so that's how I approach the team, and I try to get the guys to buy into that. And they do. They, for the most part, they've all bought in. Kind of steal a phrase from the Gophers, we're all rowing the boat in the same direction.
Yep.
And that's good. Sometimes you get guys that want to go off on their own, and what do? You know, we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting paid anything, so.
Again, you're not professionals. Nope. And there probably isn't any professional careers in the future of most of the Roosters.
No, they're if they're coming through the Roosters to try and get to the next level.
They're on the wrong path.
Yeah.
It's a fun game, that's for sure. I grew up playing in RYBA, and then I eventually played traveling ball on the South team. So there's a North and a South team. Yep. And I remember the North team always kicked our tail. They were always stronger and better and bigger. And speaking of stronger, better, and bigger, Ben Call over at RE/MAX, he was a home run hitter. That guy, he would always hit home runs. Was there home runs back in the Roosters days?
Yes, but not automatic.
Okay, so there wasn't the fence where it's like...
Right. Yep. Most fields were open. Now, out at our field, we have some fences, and then the time they were put up, they were far enough back that they didn't come into play. They used a softer ball, and it was an older team and nobody could hit it that far. Well, it's gotten to be now where I make the balls a little harder, and some of the guys that are playing now are pretty strong. They can get it to the fence and get it over, but you still got to run, and they got to go around the fence, chase the ball, bring it back in, and it's not a home run until you cross home plate. And so they had two types of home runs in the 1860s. A home run where once you hit it, and if you made it all the way home, it didn't matter what happened. They could have thrown the ball into the stands, whatever. But there was a clean home run, and that was the one where they didn't make any mistakes or errors, and you made it home. So there was two types.
Mm.
But it was never automatic. And even into the 1880s and 1890s, when they started to have fences, there were years where if the fence was closer than 250 feet and it went over, it was a double. But if it was more than 250 feet, okay, then it's a home run. So you still didn't have automatics all the time. So, yeah, it's, you got to run it out.
Right.
What you thinking?
I mean, that's just, that's, like, I barely know anything about baseball, but that seems pretty cool.
There's some real history.
Yeah. It's just the thing that kept, like, I don't know, baseball's scary to me.
Why do you say that?
Because I was playing backyard baseball one day, and I was up to bat, and I hit the ball, and it just flew at the pitcher's, like, face, yep. And I hurt him. And so I was like, oh, I'm never going to play baseball again.
That happens in our game. It happened last year. One of my guys hit one of the pitchers from Mankato. Mm. And nobody does it on purpose.
Right.
Except for Johnny that day.
And so you always feel bad. And I've done it myself. I was actually in Ohio, hit a guy from Pennsylvania. And it's just the worst feeling in the world, like you say. But
yep.
He stood up after a while, and I thought, okay, he's not dead. That's good. And then he kept pitching.
Oh, wow.
And then the next day he had a big welt on his black eye, and I ran away from him. Because he was a big boy. But, you know, you feel bad, but you move on, and it's part of the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to get hit. But
right. When
you sign up to play barehanded baseball, there's risk.
Yeah.
What are the uniforms like?
So.
He's got one here for those that aren't here and are listening.
So we've got a long sleeve shirt, and they were generally made out of wool, so very hot. And they have a shield. This is called a shield that would indicate with a letter or some kind of a design who your team was. So there are, for us, could be Rochester, could be Roosters. And that shield was designed to follow what the firemen did back in the day. They had a shield on their chest to protect them from the heat. And so the baseball player said, that's pretty neat. And they started using something similar to that for the design. And now as we got later into the 1860s and into the 1870s, a lot of teams took the shield off and actually put the emblem right on their chest. So that would be embroidered or whatever right into the shirt. So you'd see two different types into the 1870s that way.
Because that shield could come off. It looks like it has buttons.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they come off, and we have a different color button or a different color shield for when we play against the Roadrunners, a local amateur team. They're one step below the Royals. They'll come out, and we'll put a blue one on their shirts for them with a blue tie, and then they get a blue hat. But they're also, some teams will make them reversible for that. You know, if they play home, they might
miss. Yeah.
Now, they didn't have home and away in the 1860s. I think it was the 70s. They started having different colored uniforms that way. But they come off to mostly for cleaning. So we can wash them separate from the shirts.
Right. And how about the hats?
The hat was designed based on an 1860 Brooklyn Excelsior team hat. So we know what the hat looked like in that era. We found pictures, and we designed it after that. So it's a six-panel hat, has a little button on the top. And then in the 1870s, they kind of squared up and became what was called a Chicago-style cap. So instead of round on top like ours, it's more squarish, if you will. It would stand up about yay high and on your head, a little bit different. But again, we're trying to do everything they did in the 1860s.
Hmm. How about the cleats? Were there cleats?
Yes. Oh, yeah. They were homemade. So what you do is you take a pair of work shoes, you would take the sole out of the shoe, you would pound four or five nails through the shoe, put the sole back in, and then that's what you would wear.
Sew the sole to the shoe again? I mean, how would this...
Well, I said sole. That's probably wrong. It's the insert, whatever is
inside
there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
you pull that out, pound the spikes through the sole. That's yes. probably a better way.
Yep.
Put that insert back in. But it was very painful.
But it was your work shoes too.
Yeah. And you just take the spikes out when you go to work. And so later in the 60s and the 1870s, as sporting goods stores started to develop more, then they would sell a more typical built-in cleat or built-in spike that way.
Wow. All right, I'm going in on this these bakery items. What do we
got? Banana bread, blueberry cheesecake cookies, which you've got there.
Yes.
And then a cherry cheesecake cookie.
Have you had one of these yet?
I've had two of them.
All right, well, I enjoy this. Go for it, Johnny. What else are you thinking?
So what's, is that a rubber band ball
there? Yeah, so this is part of what I do for making the baseball. So I start out with a handful of rubber bands, and I just wrap them around each other and keep wrapping until I get a rubber band ball. I mentioned earlier there's some fields that are shorter that need a softer ball. I'll stop with a ball about an inch and a half in circumference, maybe two. And then if I do a full field, I'll get it all the way up to where it's 7 inches all the way around in that ball. So this ball is going to travel a lot farther than this ball, obviously, because what makes up the rest of it is yarn. Okay. So I've now wrapped this with yarn. And then we buy hides of leather. This comes in a full, about the size of this table. Oh. And then we mark it up with the pattern for the ball. Now, I've got this marked at 1860. I make baseballs for 64, 67, 69, whatever year it is, and they vary. I actually was very honored to be chosen to, I actually gave a presentation out at the Baseball Hall of Fame earlier this year to talk about how they made the baseballs and how they changed over time, what they looked like. And I've got a whole display of all the different types of baseballs.
So what year is this one right here?
That's 1861. Actually, from 61 to 67, the ball didn't change.
And how, like, why, like, what changed in the ball?
So in that ball is between 9.5 and 9.75 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And it weighs between 5.5 and 5.75 ounces. So the year we play 1860, it's 1/4 inch bigger. It goes from 5.75 to 6 ounces, and then 9.75 to 10 inches in circumference. And then in 1858, or 57, which was the first year they really had a codified size, it was 10.25 to 10.5, a little bit bigger. And the ball got smaller over time, mostly because of people were getting hurt. And they saw that with cricket, which was using a ball about that size, there were less injuries, even though the ball was harder. So they wanted to get the ball a little bit smaller. And so in 1872, the ball became 5 to 5.25 inches around, 9 to 9.25 ounces, and it hasn't changed since. The ball today is the same as the ball of 1872 from a weight and size requirement.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is it got harder because they started using machines.
Okay.
This is all handmade.
Right.
And they ain't no machines for anything here.
And what's the difference with the machines?
Well, the machines will wrap the yarn around.
Like way tighter. Yeah.
So I brought this. This is from a modern baseball today.
It's like, for those that can't see it, I would say it's the size of a foosball almost.
Yep.
And it's probably bounces, right? I mean, it's got some bounce to it. Yeah.
But it's what they call vulcanized. In other words, they took a rubber band ball, heated it up, melted it, so it's all one solid piece now.
Okay.
So in 1872, the rule said your ball has to have vulcanized rubber, which just means
it's And why do you think they said that?
Because it provided less springy ball.
Okay. So otherwise,
Yeah, the balls were traveling a little bit too fast, a little too far, and they needed
And people are getting stronger. Yeah. I mean, right? And they're getting better at the game. I mean, you look at the game today, and people are huge, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're just compared to what it was.
You get a guy like Aaron Judge up to bat. I don't even want to be near third base, right? I don't care. You give me five gloves.
Dude, yeah.
I don't want to be there.
No.
Right? So it's just nuts what these guys can do.
That's the closest place you can be to death.
Other than the pitcher.
Other than the pitcher. Third base.
But if you're the pitcher, you can control where you throw it. So if you don't want it coming at you, keep it inside. Punish the third baseman.
Wait, why would he hit it at the third baseman? I don't know. I'm just confused.
When you're a right-handed hitter, your power is going to the left side of the infield, and that's where the third baseman is standing.
Okay.
And he's only 90 feet away.
Because if you think about it, it's up here. You're coming in like this. It's going to go this way. It's not going to go that way.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
But yeah, it's... It was that. And so the baseball overtime has changed so much. You know, there was people talk about the dead ball era and they think the 1920s. Well, there was a dead ball era in the 1800s, and they actually made the baseball, and the cover they used was red to signify that it was a dead red ball, so that it wouldn't go as far. So they went through that era even in the 1870s. So most people, you hear dead ball era, oh, 1920s. For those of us that have been back in the history, it's like, well, which one?
Gotcha.
There were multiple dead ball eras. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, so what goes around the vulcanized rubber in a baseball?
Today?
Yeah.
Yarn. It's just, no, everything's the same. Now, they're going to use probably all woolen yarn because they can wrap it a lot tighter using the machines.
Okay.
And keep the weight, where if I wrapped it by hand, sometimes I get a little out of bounds on the weight if the yarn's heavier.
Okay.
So I have to be careful between cotton and wool, how much I use of each, because I want to stay within the confines of what weight limit they've given me for that year.
Right. Okay. I thought it was like concrete.
No.
I'm not going to lie. I was like, because it's so
hard. It is hard.
It was so hard. I was like.
Yeah. You wrap it with machines, you can get it really tight.
Yeah. I was like, what is in there? I just never knew.
Yep.
Is it true that Austin, Minnesota, Hormel, they had like a deep passion, the founders, for baseball?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't know that.
I had heard that, and it led to baseball games being played and teams being in Austin, Minnesota for that reason.
Could very well be. We actually tried to start a team in Austin, and we had a guy who was working for the History Center over there, and we got some games in Grand Meadow, which is part of that same county, and we were hoping to get him interested over in Austin, but then he took a new job up in, I think, in Red Wing, and it's like, kind of lost that
end.
But then we got the team in Red Wing, so that was
Was nice. That's neat.
So, yeah, if there's people listening in Austin and they're interested, I'll help you get going.
And what does it take to get started?
Someone willing to put in the legwork, do a little recruiting, get some sponsors, find a place to play. You don't need to spend the money on the uniforms right away. Just everybody wear a pair of blue jeans and a gray T-shirt, start or something. It won't be authentic, but there's no sense spending a ton of money and then go, couldn't do it. So get something going. However you can, and then once you get something established, then you can start spending some money on uniforms and whatnot.
And I'm sure that helps with sponsors. And how does that work Rochester-wise? Like, who are your sponsors, and how are they sponsoring?
So that's a good question. We have a lot. Now, most of this was done by Mary Jane Schmidt, who started it. And I think I mentioned she died about 3 years ago, but she did all this legwork. And so we've had one sponsor has been with us the entire 23 years. That's Valentino's. Can I say Valentino's on
there? Heck yeah.
Yeah. So they've been with us.
Thank you, Valentino's.
Yeah. So they started out by paying for an outfield sign. We have those outfield signs, and we sell them as advertising. And then over the years, we built a concession stand out there to try and raise a little extra money. And they said, well, we would like to be your pizza sponsor. So they started giving us pizzas to sell instead of the money. We kept them on the outfield sign. So we have cash people who buy signs for advertising, and we have in-kind people who have started with the sign, and then now we have a need for something that they have, they provide it to us, and then we let them keep the sign that way. So Valentino's has been with us, Arctic Ice, who, you know, so we need our concession stand, we need cold pop and cold sodas, and we sell ice snow cones, so we go through a lot of ice. They provide us all the ice that we need for that. Schmidt Automotive,
he's a history buff.
Oh, yeah. Tim. Well, and it's his mother that run the team.
Is it? Okay.
And so he's been a great sponsor. Every year he comes through for us.
I didn't know that history. That's neat.
Yeah. Huh. And we picked up last year Little Thistle Brewery.
Yeah.
So during the summer, they named a beer for us, the Brewster Cream Ale. And they let us use their social media to advertise our events. You get an outfield sign.
Great.
And so we picked up the Friends Bookstore at the library this year. We've had Seeger and Dunlap and Seeger.
Yeah, yeah.
Doug Basie, who works there, is on the board at the History Center. So there's connections. But we're always looking for more. And that's one area where I can't do what Mary Jane did, because she was a retired lady and just spent her days around town looking for sponsors. I'm at work all day. I haven't retired yet. So I can't bring in the sponsors like she could. So I always ask the guys on my team, if you know anybody that might be interested, let's work something out. You know, we got $500 for an outfield sign. We have our game day handouts where put on all the pages, we get different advertising levels of people that are sponsoring us. And in there, we talk about the differences of the game, like we've already talked about. And an opportunity for every person that comes through the gate that pays their 2 bits to get in, gets one of those.
2 bits? What? What's 2 bits?
2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. So how much is 2 bits?
It is 20 cents.
So no. You went to a different school than me. It's 25 cents. But
that was Johnny for those listening. That was not Bucky.
Come on, Bucky.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's 25 cents.
Four, but if, six, someone, eight, ten.
If someone came to us and said, I don't have a quarter,
Johnny,
I don't care.
You would not have guessed a quarter. You were not going to guess a quarter.
I was thinking about it.
You weren't going to say a quarter.
I was going to say a quarter.
So, now we know. Learn something new.
Jeez. Yeah, we don't want to keep people away. We want people to come in. And if you can't afford the quarter, come anyway.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
That's great.
We got guys that'll throw a $10 bill in our bucket because they want to support us. We got guys that walk past us. We don't care. Come watch the game and learn something.
Right.
You know, we don't need a lot of money to survive. What we do make goes right to the History Center. We're trying to just help support them and all the great things that they do. Mm-hmm. We just need a few bucks for maybe a bat. You know, maybe we need to fix some uniforms or something. We just, you know, but we do what we can.
Yeah. Baseball's strong in Rochester, I feel. I think it is. I mean, you got the Honkers, which is a pro-am team. I don't know the exact AAA or AA, but.
Well, it's college level.
College level.
College kids trying to get to that level.
Yep. We got the Roosters. We got the Royals. Yep.
They're a Class B amateur. They're the highest level of baseball we've got.
Oh, okay.
And then the Roadrunners are Class C, which is the one step below.
I didn't even know the Roadrunners.
Yep. A lot of people don't, and it's too bad. I have a great group of guys. They come and play us every year for Rochester Fest now.
Okay.
We used to have the Royals come out, and you mentioned Ben Call. He has a big brother who played for the Royals. They used to come out and just demolish us. Just demolish us. It would be like 3 innings of them trying to figure out the game where it was close, and then it was like, yeah, whatever.
We got this.
And so... And then they took on the Spam Jam tournament over in Austin. That was the same weekend as Rochester Fest.
Okay.
And so we lost them. We brought in the Roadrunners probably 7 years ago. And every single game has been like 10 to 9 or 12 to 8. It's just been very competitive.
Fun.
They love coming out to play. The young kids, that it takes them 2 or 3, 4 innings to kind of catch on. And then they're all athletic. They're all baseball players. And then they just turn it on. And we have fun. It's just a blast. They actually invited us out, not this past season, but the season before, when one of their opponents forfeited. They invited us to come play real baseball on their field, where they pitched overhand to us, and we looked silly.
And where was that?
It actually took place at Hudson Field,
okay,
where they play their home games. They say, yeah, come on out. And it was a blast. My guys loved it. We swung and missed, and we just tried really hard not to get hit. Every once in a while, you'd make contact, and it was like, ouch, 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 ouch.
All right.
But, yeah, great group of guys.
And then, of course, we got traveling and RYBA, yep. And I think the softball program's strong locally as well. That's what I hear, at least, which is it's a sport that it's probably one of the oldest, isn't it? I mean, how many sports go back to the 1800s?
Well, actually, softball is early 1900s, not quite as old. Came out of a game called kitten ball. But we've actually, the Roosters have sponsored for the last probably 7, 8 years an RYBA team. So we get them wearing our shirts with our logo on it. We go out for one of their practices, teach them how to play barehanded, and teach them our cheers and stuff. And we have a blast with that. They have a blast. So we try to get involved in the community that way with baseball. This past season, the Honkers let us go on their field and play against a team from La Crescent before one of their games. So that was a blast for us to get out on kind of a real field, even though it wasn't authentic. It was just a good time to play there. And the teams that were there to waiting to play, watching us, were just all shaking their heads going, what are
what are these guys doing?
Yeah.
Came out
so,
of
it. So is it more fun to watch 1860s baseball or... baseball as we know it today, for you?
Well, for me, I don't generally sit and watch 1860s because I'm usually playing or umpiring.
Yeah.
But what I like about it is that when I'm the umpire, especially, I got the microphone. I can explain it to people.
Because
if you just sit and watch it and no one's saying anything, then you're just looking at the guy next to you going, what's happening? And then you pick up your little hand and go, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So you need someone that can explain it to you. So it's, to me, it's more fun for, should be more fun for people to go now and watch an 1860s game because it's different. When you go to a Twins game, you go to a Red Sox game, you go to a Cardinals game, it's baseball and the rules are the rules and you know the game mostly other than Johnny.
Yep.
But you come to one of our games, it's like, okay, I got to put a different hat on and I got to listen. Yeah. I got to watch. I got to see what's going on. I liken it to the first time I went to a roller derby.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
You're trying to. Okay, say did this this time, they did this the next time, and you walk away going, I don't really understand it. The next time you go, okay, I remember that from before.
Right.
Slowly, you're, no one was there telling you what was going on, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advantage we have is we'll tell you what's going on.
And the umpire, you say, has a microphone. What do you mean by that?
Well, at our games.
Yeah.
We have our, we rig up our umpires with a microphone. We have a speaker on a big post so that we can do this. We can educate. They didn't have it in 1860. Umpires didn't say a word. Matter of fact, if you talk to an umpire, you would be asked to leave.
Are you out, Johnny?
Yep, I'm heading out.
What do you got to do now?
Got to
go play some baseball in the snow?
Got a hot date. Can you tell he's smiling? He got a hot date.
I got a hot date, actually.
There you go.
And you know what? You're going to tell her all about 1860s baseball?
1860s baseball,
and
yes, sir.
And she's going to fall in love.
I hope she's already in love.
See you, Johnny. Thank you for joining on the Opposite Channel podcast, man. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, Roosters and just looking at the program and what, you know, what has developed over time, what would you say is some of the bright things in the future you're excited for as the program continually develops?
Yeah, so we're about to start in 2020, our 24th season. And so 2021 is going to be 25. And I think when Mary Jane started this program, I'm not sure in her head she thought, what is this going to be in 25 years? It was, we got something here, you know, it's kind of cool. How long is it going to last? Well, when she died 3 years ago, one of the last things I was able to say to her was, we're going to get 25. And so, like I say, with my wife's help, we kind of took it upon ourselves to say, we got to keep this going. This has got to get to 25.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to stop at 25, but I'll be 60 next year. How long am I going to want to do this? You know, I can still get out in the field and embarrass myself a little bit. But there'll come a time where I can't. And whether I umpire or I would do something else, I'm not sure. But there's so many good things that can come of this program with the right support. And we just got to get that going strong through the History Center, through our community impact. Doing podcasts like this, I hope, helps. I hope there's someone out there that didn't know this,
mm-hmm.
and they're now thinking, oh, I want to get to this because within a week I'm going to have our 2020 schedule published on our Facebook page.
And when does the season start?
For us, our first match is May 16th.
Okay.
It'll be over in La Crescent. It's pretty much been how we've started our season since I started. La Crescent hosts one of the first events of the year for Minnesota area, and we've always gone over there. Our first home event this year will be for Father's Day, June 21st.
Fun.
We bring in the team from Mankato. Those games are so competitive with them. Every game is within one or two runs. It's just, they're so much fun. They're so good. And we can be good, too, at times, if we get the right nine. So, but that's true of every team. I could bring out nine guys like me, and we barely score a run. But I also got nine guys I can bring out that are going to beat a lot of teams.
You know, right.
Got some good guys. I just can't get them all at the same time, always.
So if you want to be a player, what does that entail? Can you just show up, or do you sign up, or what does it take?
What I usually tell people is send me an email or go to our Facebook page and drop a message. I run that. I'll see it.
Yeah.
And I'll get you to a practice. And I tell people, we'll run you through a practice. If you like it, you're in. The only thing I'm looking for is, can you defend yourself against a hard-hit baseball? If you can't, I'm going to suggest you don't play. I can't stop you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, if you can't get your hands up in front of a ball, you're going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants that. I don't need highly skilled players. I'm looking for good people that love the history, that want to promote the team, promote the game. I'm looking for umpires. I'm looking for scorekeepers. I'm looking for concession workers. If you want to participate in any way, you just got to let me know. We got a spot for just about anybody.
That's great. I do see you guys out there on social. You got a Facebook page. You actually messaged me on Twitter, wasn't it?
Yeah, I saw. Well, what brought this on was one of my players,
yeah,
Brian Olson, liked your tweet.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, Brian Olson liked this. Somebody's looking for a podcast. And as you can tell, I love to talk about baseball. I'm like, as a joke, I don't know you. I don't know what's going on. Will you talk about 19th century baseball? And I figured there'd just be a, it would end.
Yeah.
And then it came back. Yeah, why not? Okay.
Yes.
And that's how I got here. So Brian has been with, you know Brian?
Yeah, I know Brian.
So he's been.
I picture his profile photo too with the hat on. Yeah. Like he sports it and loves it.
Him and his brother have been with the Roosters probably 16, 17 years.
Okay.
Very good players, very good players. And so I saw that, and I was like, why not? Let's just see what happens.
Well, you guys are doing a good job of working social. That's what it takes in today's era is, you know, getting out there online in a relatively free environment like Facebook or Twitter and just be willing to have the conversations and
promote. I'll talk to anybody anywhere about this. I've been to groups, you know, Kiwanis, Rotary, whatever, whoever is looking for someone just to fill a half hour or an hour's time to talk, and that. And they might find the history of baseball interesting, which we really haven't even touched on.
Yeah. You didn't get onto the bats. That was my other thoughts, is the bats probably have changed a ton.
Yeah. And so there was no, the only restriction on the bat starting in 1857 was that the diameter of the barrel was 2.5 inches or less. That was it until 1868. And this is what makes it interesting, is that in 1868, they said you no longer can have a bat greater than 42 inches. The average bat today is probably 32. And they're telling people, quit using bats bigger than 42 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what they were? They were grabbing a limb off of a tree and swinging it.
Right. Thing was huge. It was.
And so, but it maintained the diameter of the bat to be 2.5 inches.
Yeah.
And so what made them different, and actually you probably won't be able to show this, but look at the way that guy is holding that bat.
Okay, so...
And it's the only way he can swing it is to get his hands apart.
For those listening, you know, if you've seen people swing baseball bats, both their hands are together. In this picture, the one hand is down towards the butt of the bat. Is that what it's called? And the other hand is up towards the choke of the bat. I mean, it's...
It's about a third of the way up the barrel.
Third of the way up the barrel, yeah. So yeah. That is...
They swung lumber back in the day.
Because it was lumber. Right? That's impressive.
Now, not everybody did that, and that's a illustration. But it happened. I mean, the bats were big, and they had to make this restriction to 42 inches. We don't have a bat 42 inches in our
bag. I was going to say, so what if the Roosters come out with a tree? And
I think our biggest bat's probably 38 or 39 inches. Probably weighs about 38 or 39 ounces, too, but it doesn't get swung a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If we get, like, way ahead or way behind, somebody will pull it out and go, let's have some fun. And you got to start swinging early.
Takes a long time to get it around. Yeah. And then make sure you hold on to it so it doesn't go back and hit anybody behind you.
Yes, or you don't pull a muscle.
And is the ump behind the catcher?
The umpire will stand on facing the baseline that the striker would hit. So if he's a right-handed hitter, he's standing off to the side where he can look down the third baseline because he's got only two things to worry about, actually three, but the two main ones are fair or foul ball,
mm-hmm.
and he'll only call a ball if it's foul. If it's fair, he'll say nothing. So if you hear nothing, no matter what you think,
fair.
You run. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. You could have seen it land foul in front of you. He didn't say foul.
He didn't see it.
You ran.
Yep.
Right? And that was the end of it.
And there wasn't three umpires like today. No. Or is there even more than three? There might be.
No. So in 1857, there were two umpires and a referee. So each team provided an umpire and then had a referee to settle disputes. Well, it became obvious that if it's against my team, I'm calling it this way. He's going to call it that way. The referee was handling everything anyway.
Yeah.
Get rid of the two umpires. We'll just have one umpire, and that's it. So yeah, he stood to watch for the fair foul, and then he had to call box was the other thing. Well, in 1858, they added the calling of strikes after a warning, which means if you let good pitches go by continuously trying to help your team advance a runner, because you're always waiting for the catcher to miss it because he didn't have a glove.
Mm-hmm.
So they instituted calling the strike in 1858, and then in 64, calling the balls. But in our game, most of the people up there to swing, you never get to a called strike. You just never, you don't let it get that far because here's a good pitch. Your eyes get big and you whop it.
And it's not coming at 90.
No.
Yeah.
No. So, his job is to call foul balls, box, and strikes in our era. He wouldn't call anything on the bases unless he was asked to. So the players, if you're running to second base and I tag you right before your foot gets down, I'll say, I got you. And then you might think, oh, no, my foot was on the base before you touched me. And we'll discuss it. If we can't agree, we ask him for his judgment.
Oh, wow. So if you can't agree.
Right. So
that would be the way to do it still today. Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, the thing is, the modern person isn't wired that way. I've had guys, and I try and tell them, I said, look, if it's even close, walk away. Okay, let's just show them that part of the game. There's other people that, nope, I'm not getting out no matter what. You could be out by 2 steps. I'm not out. And they'll argue. It's like, you know, that's not what we want to
it's
show.
It's not 1860.
Yeah, so it's hard. You know, we could say that today in Major League Baseball, you got to call your own, and you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're going to fight about it.
And arm wrestle to determine.
Yeah, whatever it is. So, but it's a neat part of our game that I tell people is like, if it's close and you're not sure, call yourself out and just walk off the base. And then as an umpire, I can explain what just happened because that's what we're there to do, educate. If you just sit there and argue, it's like, now we're modern baseball. You know, don't do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining. We made it to our mark. We tried to go for 45 minutes at the office of China Hall, and we're right there. So Perfect. Learned a lot. The history of baseball is rich, and there's a lot there.
There's a lot more to go, too, if you ever need a time filler on your guy.
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to learn more about the Roosters Baseball Club, where would you send them? How can they reach out?
The easiest way is go to Facebook. Search on Roosters Baseball Club, baseball being two words. That's the way it was in 1860. I drop us a message. I'm the one you'll find. And then I'll get in touch with you either via email or something, and we'll get something worked out. But that's the easiest way for me is to just go right to Facebook.
And then again, when is your first home game here in Rochester, and where is it at?
It will be Father's Day, June 21st. I believe it's Sunday at the History Center of Olmsted County. We play on Schmidt Field, which is located behind the main museum building. We have a nice little field area set up. We got concessions. It's only 25 cents, 2 bits to get in, and we'll take care of you.
If I come with 20 cents, can I still get in?
You can come in. If you got nothing,
we'll let you in.
We'll let you in. We want you there because our goal is to educate.
That's great.
And if you're not there, we can't help you.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Office of China Hall. We'll have our outro music, and we hope that you have a great Happy New Year's as we approach 2020.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.